Nibbana on the 12th of July, 1979. The teaching, the Ovada Patimokkha of all of the Buddhas, summarizes into three main topics. Sabbapapasa akaranam, avoiding doing any kind of evil. Kusala supasampada, the cleansing of one's heart and the instilling into it of wisdom, skill, and mastery. The developing of the kusala, or the wholesome things, which really means the development of wisdom. Kusala here refers to skill, mastery, and wisdom. Sacitta pariyodhapanam, the cleansing and the purifying of one's citta, so that it can become luminous and bright, and attain to the state of purity. Etang buddhana sasanam, this is the teaching of all the Buddhas. These are the three cardinal points of the teaching of the Lord Buddha. This is the fundamental principle. Then the Lord elaborated further. Anupavado, abstaining from criticizing and finding fault with others. Anupakkhato, avoiding destroying or hurting other people and other animals. Patimokkheca sangvaro, being restrained within the rules of the discipline, which is the patimokkha. Mattanyutta ca patasmin, knowing the right measure or moderation in eating, as well as knowing the right measure of dispensing with the four living requisites. The Lord said that we should know moderation and the right measure, which means suitability or propriety, the Majjhima. Pantanja sayanasanam, seeking and dwelling in seclusion and solitude. Atichitte ca ayogo, here the Lord re-emphasized further, making the citta become mighty and powerful through superiority and transcendence. And again, etang buddhana sasanam, this is the teaching of all of the Buddhas. These are the verses that are recited at the end of the Patimokkha, the rules of the discipline. We have to be intent and resolute with the truth and Dhamma of the Lord Buddha. Don't merely gloss over it. Like ones having read the Dhamma and committed it into memory, one then claims these things as one's own possession. This is not yet one's genuine possession. It is only the memory of the various concepts and theories of Dhamma, which we have to take up and use in our practice, then following it correctly. They still cannot be considered one's true and genuine possession. For this reason, the Lord called this pariyatti. This is studying. However much we might have studied, this is pariyatti, the theoretical study. Patipatti is the practice following the concepts and theories that we have learned. This is the way of practicing and getting rid of the kilesas and instilling into ourselves virtue and Dhamma. This Dhamma is the Magga, which fundamentally consists of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. We have to do this ourselves, and this is called Patipatti. Pativeda is the gradual, leading to the total realization and penetration of all the Satchadhamma. This is the result or the fruit that we call Pativeda. The realization and penetration, which is the consequence of our practice, which in turn follows on from what we have learned in the various concepts and theories, either from the text or from our teacher, and especially from our upachaya, our preceptor. And this is pariyatti, the studying of gesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho, and so forth. This is the studying of the gammatthana, or the finding out what our work is. This is the most important work, the work of uprooting lives and existences, the eradicating of the vata samsara, the kilesas and tanha from the heart. We have to uproot them with this particular means. This is because every kind of kilesa, tanha and asava hides behind the hair of the head, the hair of the body, the nails, teeth, skin and bones, and the rest of the 32 parts of the body. They are all the hiding places of the kilesas. For this reason, we have to unravel and clear them up and reveal them so that we can see their true natures. Then the kilesas will not be able to hide behind them. For Panya will now have exposed and uncloaked them. It will have eradicated all those things that cover and obscure, and the hiding places of all the various kinds of kilesas and tanha. Panya can do this gradually, and this is the aspect of practice. Wherever we are, we must not lose sight of this work. This work is highly sophisticated and subtle. It is a continuous work, and not a seasonal or periodical one, like the work for the government or farming, which has certain times and certain seasons to do. That is the work that starts in the morning and finishes in the evening. This is the way that the world does its work, the work of overcoming the kilesas, tanha and asava, which is the work of Dhamma, which can instill Dhamma within ourselves. His work in which we cannot use the way of the world, for they contradict one another. The world has its time, schedules, and seasons. The civil servants begin to work at a particular time, and they leave work at a certain time. It is the same way in all the factories. They all have their time of opening and closing. Farming is done seasonally. The work of the world follows a certain time schedule. But the work that we are doing is subtle, comprehensive, and very intensive. It is quite strenuous, but not to the extent where we can become weary of it. This is subtle work, because the kilesas are extremely subtle. For this reason, we have to scrutinize and investigate constantly, both day and night, in sitting, walking, and lying down. This is with the exception of when we go to sleep, when it will be impossible for us to do anything about it. Otherwise, we must have this work constantly sticking to our awareness and constantly having sati overseeing the work. While we are standing, we must be doing the work, having any particular object, which is the instrument for the eradication of the kilesas. We can investigate the hair of the body, the hair of the head, the nails, the teeth, the skin, the flesh, the bones, or any other parts of the body. We have to be constantly possessed with mindfulness. Panya is the discriminating and discerning factor that differentiates and analyzes. It is ingenious, resourceful, and versatile. One must not do it blindly, nor wander aimlessly in the sea of doubt. When one doesn't have any panya yet, then one must depend on sati to direct one's work. For the sake of calm, one must round up the flow of the citta. One must round it in by depending on sati and the practice of bhavana, using any particular dhamma object, as I have previously explained. This is the way of consolidating the power of the citta. Once the flow of the citta is united and converges within, then the citta will become strengthened. The normal tendency of the citta is to go adrift, scattering and dispersing. This is the way that it is constantly behaving. There isn't a single moment when the citta is free from this activity of thinking and concocting, apart from the time when one is in a deep state of sleep. And if one is not in this state of deep sleep, then there will still be this concocting coming up through the various kinds of dreams. And this is the activity of the citta. One who is intent on bringing back to life the truth and Dhamma, the Nirodha Dhamma, which is within the heart, must strive in developing the Magga Dhamma. He must strengthen this Dhamma. Sati is Magga. Samadhi is Magga. Panya is Magga. One's strenuous exertion is Magga. The objects of our work, like Gesa, Loma, for instance, are also the Magga. The Magga is found everywhere, if only we just investigate in the light of Magga. Once the citta is without sati, then it will go adrift and become weakened. It will gravitate to the attractions of the kilesas that have existed originally. This will definitely happen. For this reason, it is necessary to depend on force and coercion, pressure and discipline, in order to free oneself from the attraction of all kinds of kilesas and asavas, which are like magnets that pull our hearts away and put them under their spells and influence. It is the kilesas that cause beings to be born and to die, and to suffer dukkha, and to become confused. The principal culprit of these things is the kilesas. We should never think that it is anything else. That is the cause of all of these problems. If this is the way it is, we must concentrate all of our effort so that we can match them. And this is the only way of striving, which must be continuous until our sati becomes sampajanya, right within ourselves. Being mindful is sati. Being constantly mindful of the work that we are doing, or the constant controlling of the citta to do the work with intention and attention, is called sati, or the correct way of doing the work. This is right exertion, and it is the magga. This work is completely different from the rest of the work in the world. One who strives in this work is not concerned with the time, for he is truly intent for deliverance from dukkha. If one's determination is full to the brim in one's heart, one will become very diligent and hard-working, striving and struggling, enduring and persevering, due to the power of one's intent that attracts all of these things. No matter how hard or difficult it is, one will not waver, for one will always be tough and sturdy. This is due to the great strength of one's determination. It is like a magnet that attracts one's diligent effort and the application of one's energy in overcoming every kind of kilesa. We will become stronger and more powerful. We must not cherish or become involved with the affairs of the world that we have already experienced from the first day of our birth. They are the things that by now we should not have any uncertainty about. As long as we still cherish them, then we will still be dragged and pulled along by these things, which emerge from our affection for them. And that is the attraction of the world. This world here refers to the kilesas. As far as we, the practitioners, are concerned, the world is the kilesas and nothing else. The kilesas are samuti. They are the influences that drag and weigh down the heart. They do this constantly without letting go or relenting. When people do work in the world, they have to take time out for rest. But the kilesas do not rest. They are constantly working. The cultivation of Dhamma must therefore depend on one's diligent effort and the constant and continuous application of this effort. One has to strive and exert oneself. Chanda, one of the factors of the Itipada, the ways to success, is the basis of success. It is the foundation of accomplishment. Any kind of work or objective can be achieved once there are the Itipada. Chanda is to be satisfied with one's diligent effort. and one's exertion for the state of deliverance. Virya is to strive relentlessly in all the various postures of exertion. One must be constantly watchful of one's thinking and conceiving. One must see which way it is going. Usually it tends to go in the way of the kilesas, almost 100%. If there is sati, then the kilesas will back off. But if one doesn't have any mindfulness, then the kilesas will hit at us. Citta, the Lord said, is attentiveness. One must not let one's knowingness, which is the heart, and one's sati, be far away from one's exertion, which is the target or objective, which can deliver one to the state free from dukkha. One's concentration and attentiveness will and must be continuous. And this is what our work is about. Vimamsa is panya, which is the important tool for the uprooting of the kilesas. It is used to clear away every kind of kilesa, so that they can be totally got rid of from the heart, and so that the heart can become lofty and magnificent, bold and courageous, bright and luminous. It will become skillful and discerning, so that it will have the capability of coping and contending with the kilesas further. The citta must be possessed with sati and panya. They must be the things that oversee the citta. Alone by itself, the citta doesn't know anything about good or bad, right or wrong. It has to depend on sati and panya to guide, direct, and discern things, and to protect itself so that it can be safe and secure. If it is not protected by these things, then the citta must go and follow the ways of the kilesas. If one doesn't have any sati within one's heart, then one is considered an insane person. This is because sati is extremely significant. It can be mindful of what is right or wrong, good or evil. An insane person who wanders aimlessly along the streets, and who pays no heed to what is right and what is wrong, and who drifts following his whims and fancies, is one who is possessed with the citta, that is lacking in mindfulness or sati and panya, to become responsible for his actions, and to discern things for him and tell him whether they are right or wrong. He doesn't know how to reason out things. He is not sound or intelligent. This is the way of people who are totally lacking in sati. Once one is totally devoid of sati, then one is crazy. The heart knows, but it doesn't know whether it is right or wrong. One just does things following the desires of the kilesas, which pervade all over the heart. One will just sit down, or stand up, or lay down, wherever one wants to do so. And as far as one's dirtiness and one's filth is concerned, one is not concerned about it. One cannot differentiate filth from cleanliness. This is an insane person. He doesn't understand. He merely knows. He doesn't know about good and bad, about cleanliness or filthiness, or what is right or not, and what is proper or not proper. Like, for instance, sitting in the middle of the intersection. All the cars running through this intersection must try to avoid running over this person, because during this time, the traffic policeman isn't there. All that he has got is just this knowingness that is entirely under the influence of the kilesas. He doesn't have any sati and panya, so that these things can help him discriminate things. One who is totally devoid of sati and panya is crazy. We are not crazy people, for we have sati just like other ordinary people. But this kind of sati is not yet capable of overcoming the kilesas, tanha and asava, following our aim and intention. We have therefore to depend on the means of sati that is involved with the various aspects of Dhamma, so that it will be possible for us to uproot and eradicate the kilesas and be capable of establishing calm. When we are focusing this knowingness on any particular Dhamma object, we must have sati directing this work, so that the citta can be concentrated within the work. Once the citta is being protected by sati, then the kilesas will not be capable of dragging the citta away to the various kinds of aramana. The heart can attain to calm due to the protection of sati. One can only gain calm by sati. When the time is appropriate for us to use the resourcefulness and ingenuity of panya, then we must really apply it. We can investigate the element aggregate, either of ourselves or other living beings. This is the way of Magga, entirely. We have to investigate and compare ourselves with others. Wherever we go, we can always see the Satya Dhamma, for it is never lacking in this world. This is especially so with Dukkha and Samudaya. They are found everywhere in this world. Everywhere in this world, the mass of dukkha and samudaya are piling all over the hearts of every sentient being. This whole multitude of beings is possessed with dukkha and samudaya. Are dukkha and samudaya something worthwhile, worth desiring? Samudaya is the factor that builds up dukkha. How can we find any happiness from it? For this reason, we have to counter these things with another kind of truth, which is antagonistic to them and is the means of overcoming and correcting them. This is the Magga, the way of diligent effort and strenuous exertion. We have to investigate so that we can see clearly what is there in our body. We have to investigate to see in accordance with the truth. and we must not go contrary to Dhamma. When we are in contradiction to Dhamma, then we are opposing Dhamma. And this is due to the power of the kilesas. We have to look at the top, in the middle, at the bottom, and to each side. The top is the head, and the bottom is the feet. Look into it. This mass of Ariya Sajja is just as big as our body. This is the rupa aspect. We must also look inside. What is there inside this body? There is just bones in pieces or sections that are connected together by the muscles and sinews, being wrapped up by the skin and cushioned in between by the flesh and the muscles. Externally, it is covered by a very thin sheet of skin. And that is all that there is to it. Very little indeed. However, Panya is not capable of penetrating this. We are extremely ignorant. We can say this about ourselves. And we should be very ashamed of the kilesa, tanha and asava. It is something very thin and something that we shouldn't be deluded in. But still we are deluded in it. This is because the skill of the kilesas far exceeds the Dhamma. It is superior to the Dhamma within our hearts that is used to overcome them. This is because we have not yet developed the strength and power of Dhamma, Sati and Panya. These Dhammas are not yet greater than the kilesa. So we are not capable of getting rid of the kilesas at this time. For this reason, the kilesas can still infiltrate. Though we might try to investigate this body to see it as asupa, as repulsive, as anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta, the kilesas can still resist and oppose us. They blind us from seeing it as such. All we can see is people, I and they. In whatever respect we see, we always see this thing as I and mine. We see this whole heap of filthiness, particula, and a living cemetery, as a living person, as something pretty, as something beautiful, as something worth having affection for and having delight in. And this is how we see this body, every piece, every organ. This is the way of going contradictory to Dhamma, as we are influenced by the kilesas. It is therefore necessary to depend on Sati and Panya as the things to direct and control our investigation. And we have to investigate over and over, again and again. We have to coerce the heart to do the work of investigation of this body, so that we can see according to the truth. We have to see kesa, loma, nakha, danta, and tacho. When we truly see it, then we will become really sad and sick at heart. This has happened to me before. When one truly sees it, then one gets to become very sad and mournful. Tears just start rolling down. One can't help thinking, why? Why didn't I ever get to see this body before? For this body has sprung up from the first day of birth, and I have been investigating from the first day of my going forth. Especially so when I practice the Gamatana for the purpose of seeing the truth of this body, following the teaching of the Lord Buddha. But why haven't I seen this before, and only just got to see it today? It is as if this body just appeared today, although it has always been with me for many years. But why didn't I get to see it until today? One really gets to be very mournful and sorrowful. Now wherever one looks, one becomes very impressed. And as soon as one focuses one's attention at any particular part of the body, it will then spread over like ink, spreading over blotting paper. This is how panya will pervade and diffuse. Wherever it permeates, then the truth will become apparent, and one becomes very saddened and sorrowful, as panya begins to permeate to every part of the body. It goes to every aspect and every organ of the body, both the top and the bottom part, as they are all the same. Wherever one looks, they are all the same. So how can one not become sad and mournful? Thereafter, when one begins to establish it to decompose gradually, one can also see this very clearly. It will gradually decompose and dissolve. Now what will it look like when one is dead? One must focus one's attention at that body, and it will begin to decompose and dissolve, leaving just the skeleton. Then one becomes more and more saddened, and during that time, the citta becomes extremely light, as if it is about to fly. Though one is still doing the investigation, the heart now becomes mournful and sorrowful, and that is the way one gets to see the body. I saw it that way. But one doesn't get to see the body the same way every time one sees it. At one time, one will get to see it one way, and at another time, one will get to see it another way. But they can all be said to be seeing the body quite definitely. Though one might not feel the same kind of sadness and mournfulness, they all still impart some kind of result, because this realization varies from one to another. The results, therefore, vary following the way of investigation. This is the way one should utilize panya. This is how one should investigate. We have to coerce and control it, and not allow it to go anywhere else, be it any particular body that we are investigating. Acchattava bahittava kaye kaya nupassi viharate. One can either investigate the internal body, or the external body, or the body in the body. This body in the body is any particular part of the body, like seeing the hair of the head, or seeing a hair in all the hair of the head, or seeing a hair in all the hair of the body, or seeing the hair of the body, the nails, the teeth, the skin of all the bodies, or seeing any particular part of the body. This is seeing the body in the body. One can look at the external body and then compare it with the inner body. The Lord said that we have to investigate and compare the internal and the external body. This is clearly stated in the Satipatthana, the foundations of mindfulness. This is the path of practice for the removing and uprooting of the kilesas, tanha, asava, avicca, and upadana. This can be achieved by the means of investigation. This is the work of the bhikkhu. This is how one must investigate. We must not be concerned or worried about anything in this world. Make it as if we are living alone within this pile of bones. We are just carrying this pile of bones here and there. We take them for a walk, take them to sit down, take them to go to sleep, and take them to discharge excrement. We are entirely consumed and concerned with worry for this body, as it is its nature to impart us with such trouble. And when we begin to have attachment for it, taking it as I and mine, then it will increase the burden so that it becomes very heavy for us. It will be so heavy that we will not be able to put forth our exertion. Whatever we do, we will become very tired and weary of it, and weak and exhausted, because we don't have the strength of heart. This is how we lose to the kilesa. The Lord Buddha and the Savakas trod the path of the four Satchadhamma. Dukkha and Samudaya was their path of practice. Let's get to understand that dukkha is dukkha. Wherever dukkha appears, that is where we have to analyze and differentiate. We have to compare this dukkha and the object that is undergoing dukkha. Separate them apart to see them according to their true nature. Because according to the natural principle, dukkha vetana is one thing. It is not the flesh, the body, or the skin. It is not the hair of the body, the hair of the head, the nails, or the teeth. These things are something else entirely. They are real, and they are separate from that thing. They are as they are. Even at the time when dukkha is totally engulfing the body itself will not have the awareness that it is being afflicted with dukkha. And it doesn't know the meaning of the dukkha that is appearing at that time. And the dukkha itself that is appearing at that time doesn't know the meaning of dukkha. It doesn't know the meaning of any particular part of the body. None of them know anything about one another. They merely manifest themselves according to their true nature. Panya must investigate to see things clearly as they are, and then one can separate them apart. One can look at dukkha and see what it is like. What gives rise to this dukkha? And where does this dukkha appear? Panya has to discern and focus its attention at any point that is being afflicted with dukkha. One must not retreat. For instance, if the bones are being afflicted with dukkha, during this time the bone is about to burst apart, and one is really feeling a lot of excruciating pain in that particular part of the bone. One must then really concentrate one's attention at that point. Focus the citta right there. What is really being afflicted with dukkha? Is the bone really being afflicted with dukkha? In a dead person, is there really any dukkha? When the bones are being burned, do they show any sign of pain? Show any sign of anxiety, or show any sign at all that they are being afflicted with dukkha? Do they manifest such a sign? Of course not. There is none. The skin, the flesh, and the bones are similar. They exist according to their true nature. They have no meaning in themselves. It is only the citta that gives them the meaning. Once it has given them the meaning, it then becomes deluded in this meaning. It just goes crazy after its own shadow by thinking that that thing is dukkha, or this thing is dukkha, that thing is I, and this thing is mine. Once dukkha and the body becomes mixed up together, the citta will then become involved and have to carry the burden of a lot of dukkha. When one investigates and analyzes with panya, one will then get to see very clearly that the dukkha that appears is just one form of a natural condition or process which we call the Sabhava Dhamma. The body is another form of Sabhava Dhamma. Defining and giving a meaning to things, or the presumption and assumption, all arise out of sanya, which is the consequence of all the various kinds of kilesas within the heart. They use sanya as their instrument to make up the various things, to presume and assume that that thing is afflicted with dukkha, and this thing is afflicted with dukkha, that they are this and that they are that. One has to keep on investigating, and one must now turn back and look into the heart. Is it the heart that is being afflicted with dukkha? One must now differentiate the heart and this dukkha. All that there is in the heart is just knowingness. It is not afflicted with dukkha. Dukkha is just dukkha. And bones are just bones. Dukkha is dukkha. It is true within itself. The citta, the one who knows about these things, is also another kind of truth of itself. Once one has analyzed until one can see it clearly, then the dukkha and the heart are not associated. The dukkha of the body will not become enhanced and get out of hand. No matter how severe the dukkha of the body might be, it will not be able to disturb the heart. This is because the heart now totally understands about these things due to the power of panya that is capable of investigating to see them truly as they are. One now can live at ease, peacefully and in comfort. And this is the way of doing the investigation. This is the work of panya. At the time when one gets into a critical situation, panya will arise. One is not always ignorant. When one's back is against the wall, then one has to think about helping oneself. One has to develop one's sati and panya to help oneself, to emancipate and deliver one to safety. This has already happened to me. I am not speaking out of conjecture or speculation. I have already practiced and experienced these things myself. And that is why I was able to utter within myself, people are not always ignorant. If one is in a very tight situation, like now during that time, one can attain to wisdom and skillfulness and shed away all these things with the means of panya, which is skill and wisdom. This is due to one being driven into a corner by dukkha. Dukkha oppresses and pressures one. Every part of the body and the bones seem to just burst apart. That was how severe the dukkha was. But when sati and panya relentlessly investigate, probe, and analyze these things, until one understands, then all the dukkha will not intensify. Even if it multiplies and increases, like when one is about to die, then this is merely the affair of the body, of the element aggregate. It is merely the dukkha of the body. But the citta does not become excited or go into a rage. It remains firmly fixed and stable. One can also see this very clearly. So how can one have any qualms for any dukkha or death? For dukkha is one form of Satchadhamma, and death is another form of Satchadhamma. The one who knows about all the sukha and dukkha is one form of truth. Speaking in terms of panya, that is another form of Satchadhamma. They each are real. So then they will not disturb one another. When the dukkha becomes very severe and one cannot withstand it, if it is time to die, then let it happen. We have already studied this birth, aging, illness, and death from the very first day that we began in our practice. When this living testimony appears, how can we avoid it or hide from it or escape or run away from it? How can we behave in such an illogical way? If we are the practitioners for the true realization and insight, and when we have come across this true realization and insight, how can we then become deluded again? What can one be deluded in when they each are real? when one has come to perfection, then there isn't any boldness or courage either, for there is no fear. What is there to be bold about? What is there to fear? These are all the affairs of Samuti. But for the ordinary citta, it will still have fear and courage. When it is time to be courageous, then it will be courageous. For this is the affair of Panya. It is Magga. One is fearless in facing up to Dukkha Vedana. One keeps on fighting without relenting until one dies. In treading the path of the Magga, there is boldness. But when one has transcended that point, then there is no more courage or boldness. Neither is there any fear, because one has already transcended and gone beyond the realm of fear and bravery. One has now entered the realm of normality, where it is naturally and perfectly peaceful. There is nothing else that goes in to infiltrate it, so it doesn't increase or decrease. One can neither diminish nor increase. It is absolute and natural. This is the way of investigating with Panya. In one's investigation, one has to be resourceful, ingenious, and many-sided. It will be good if one can come up with different techniques every now and then. And when one consistently and constantly investigates, then Sati and Panya will become strengthened. It will expand and branch out until it pervades all over. It will diffuse all over the entire body and pervade all over the entire world of samsara. One can investigate every part, every aspect of everything. Achattava bahittava, both the internal and the external things. One will come to true penetration and realization, becoming a loka vitu, a knower of the world. One has truly realized the truth within oneself, and then one also realizes the truth of all the rest of the world, the world of samsara, which is the realm of samuti. What is there to be deluded about? This is the power of panya. We have to apply this panya, and we have to be vigorous and enterprising. We must not remain complacent. We are now living in a place of seclusion and quietude. I have tried my best to provide you with the time for your practice so that you can really concentrate your sati, panya, satta, and diligent effort in every respect into the work of uprooting and uplifting the heart, which is now constantly calling for our help. This is because the kilesas are oppressing it to the extent where it cannot find a way out. Whether one is standing, sitting, or walking, or lying down, one is constantly being oppressed and subjugated by the kilesas within one's heart. We must therefore help our heart with our diligent effort, with our sati, panya, and satta, so that we can attain to freedom, or at least alleviate this dukkha. In alleviating dukkha, this refers to the curtailing of samudaya. If this samudaya is not reduced, then the dukkha in the heart will not be reduced. Therefore, samudaya is extremely important. What the Lord expounded in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta was only a brief summary. He said, Kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha, nandi raga sahakata, tatara tatara, pinandini. He just said this very briefly. That is, he only picked out the principal topic, like kama tanha, which is love and affection. But it can be expanded into greater detail. All of these things which the Lord expounded are found within the heart. Please don't ever think that they are found within the scriptures. The real kama tanha is not in the text. It is in our hearts. What is in the text is just the name of kama tanha, the names of the kilesas, and the name of Dhamma. We have to take the external Dhamma and use it as our guide, our compass, guiding our practice within our heart. Then this will be the correct way of doing it. One studies and commits these things to memory, so that one can apply it in one's practice, by taking it inward into the citta. One has to practice within the citta. You have to strive and exert yourself. As far as doing the practice is concerned, there should not be day or night. If one is not doing any work, and the body becomes very heavy, then one has to do a lot of walking. Walking is one way of taking exercise. If one sits too much, it can be very painful in the various parts of the body. And then one's distribution of the body in various positions is not in balance. This is not good. Standing, walking, sitting, and lying down should be equally distributed. Once one has got out of the sitting position, one has to walk. One has to walk until one gets really tired. This is the way of doing the work. For one is also working within the citta. It is also healthy for the body. One exercises the body so that the bodily functions can perform smoothly. This is because one varies the position by standing, walking, sitting, and lying down. During the 3-month period of Pansa, the rains retreat. You have to intensify your effort in your practice. Don't be concerned with anything. All the food and all the living requisites have been plentifully supplied by the laity. We take up the dutanga so that we can only eat a little and receive very little, so that we can really progress in our bhavana. But it turns out that we are getting more than we normally do. Look at the number of times that we have to empty our bowls. We wanted very little, but we are getting more than we normally get. But that is the business of the world. It is the affair of the lay devotees. They do this according to their inclination, because they are seeking for merit. They are seeking for a share of merit from our monastery, but we should not be heedless and negligent and take this food and living requisite for granted. We must always be close and intimate with Dhamma. We must have our heart close to Dhamma and take the Dhamma as our refuge. As far as being hungry or full is concerned, whether it is plentiful or lacking, this is merely the way of the world that is full of anicjang, dukkang, and anatta. There is nothing certain or definite about it. One must not be concerned or worried by these things. What we consistently concentrate on is our heart's exertion. This is the correct way. You have to keep on striving in your practice. As far as the Dutanga practice of not taking any food after Vindapata is concerned, I have done this ever since I began leading my fellow practitioners. Wherever I went, this is how I practiced, so that all of my fellow practitioners would have some basis of practice to follow. You have to really exert yourself. Don't become immersed in thinking about the business of other people, with whatever kind of affair, for this is just a waste of time. You should only look at your heart, which is constantly struggling and hankering for things. It is constantly doing its work, and most of the time, it is constantly producing a lot of samudaya. We have to master and discipline the heart, and come up with the various techniques and methods in one's practice, by depending on the means of panya. When one is doing the practice of bhavana with only one particular Dhamma object, this can become dull and bland. One has to come up with different techniques. One has to turn the citta around by depending on our ability of sati and panya. Once our practice becomes dull and bland, then it is really not good. We have to come up with new initiatives. We have to come up with different ideas that can attract our attention. We can do this with our panya. And I myself have done this before. That is why I am relating this to you. End of Dhyana.